This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week, the federal campaign trail is heating up and we're continuing our coverage for the election set for September 20th. Four candidates among the two local ridings of Cape Breton, Canso and Sydney, Victoria are weighing in on the show this week, talking about some of the issues most important to Cape Bretoners. Stay tuned, that's coming up right now. So we have two ridings representing Cape Breton with a number of candidates, and this is the second week for the interviews. We're hoping to wrap up next week with the remainder of those who threw their hats in the ring to represent you in the country's capital. Here we go in alphabetical order, starting with Ronald Angus Barron, speaking to Dialogue's Dave DeVoe. Barron is the People's Party of Canada candidate for Sydney, Victoria.
I am from Inganish originally. I have six children, ranges from the age of 1 to 20. I went to university and received my Bachelor of Engineering Technology and Manufacturing degree. I have a Mechanical Engineering Technology diploma, and I am a Red Seal ticketed millwright. I'm also a Cape Breton musician. I play the fiddle and guitar, sing. And in the last election, I looked at all three parties, and I seen the same thing. No help for Cape Breton. So I'm not a politician. I felt that I maybe could be the person to step up and actually get some change around here. And the People's Party of Canada allows me the freedom to do whatever I need to do to work with governments, work with different parties to achieve the goals I want to achieve. I don't have political lines because our platform is not specific enough. So last election, there was no representation for me, and I was hoping this time I could give representation for somebody else who might think like me.
You say there was no representation for you, and you've alluded to the other parties, in your view, not doing enough for Cape Breton, or I guess, or words to that effect. Could you flesh that out a bit more, like what's not being done that you'd like to see get done?
Well, in Section 36 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms Act, it is the Equalization Act, or the Equalization Clause. And the Equalization Clause says that all monies that go from equalization to provinces are used to help these provinces get ahead of disparity and give them opportunities to get ahead. In Nova Scotia, we are not getting ahead because we're not getting our equalization. And if somebody from the federal level could take this to a Supreme Court judge, we would get equalization tomorrow. And we're already shortfalled $3.4 billion over the last 25 years.
So why would it make any difference after somebody at the municipal level took it to the court and we got turned down, or CBRM's case got turned down on equalization? Why would you think that somebody at the federal level would get different results?
Because at the federal level is where the money comes from. So let me give you a little example. If your mother gives you money for you and your little brother to go out and get bicycles, well, you go out and you buy a Ferrari and you buy your little brother a toy bicycle that he can carry around in sand. Technically, you did what your parents told you to do, but your brother's no further ahead.
Right.
So if you can tell your mother, don't give any money until... So I would start with a federal injunction to stop all transfer funds to Nova Scotia until we can form a regional government in Cape Breton to disperse the funds to where they're supposed to be dispersed.
I guess what I'm asking is why do you think a judge would decide differently on the case just because the advocacy is coming from the federal rather than the municipal level?
Because the Supreme Court is federal. And if you look at Section 52 in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms Act, it says that the Charter is the supreme law of Canada, and any Supreme Court judge has to follow that. And it clearly states in Section 36 that they need to give the money to better our opportunities, and we're not getting better opportunities.
But the Supreme Court doesn't want to hear it. So what could
That's
you
because
do
there's
to make...
no one at the federal there's no one at the federal level pushing for it.
But you think the Supreme Court would agree to hear it if there was somebody at the federal level saying the same thing that someone at the municipal level was?
Yes, exactly. Because if I went in the legislature, then I'd be looking for the Nova Scotia Supreme Court. If I go in the House, I'm with the Supreme Court of Canada.
So you think a judge would think differently in that regard because you're at the federal level?
Exactly.
Okay. About equalization, I was just reading the People's Party's platform earlier today. My understanding is that maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it looks like they kind of want to phase out equalization over time. Does that kind of gel with the point of view you're taking on equalization?
Well, see, that's a misinterpretation. What they want is fair equalization for all provinces. For example, Alberta is being stifled with their oil production because Quebec won't let a pipeline go through, but Quebec gets the most benefit from their oil. So basically, you can't take something from somebody who's holding somebody back and then giving them the prosperity from it.
Okay.
So make it a more equal, fair approach, I guess, is what they're looking for, not eliminating it because it's something you need.
Okay, but from what I read on the People's Party's page, they seem to say that equalization is a disincentive to develop the economy. It just encourages more government bureaucracy, doesn't encourage private sector growth. That sounds to me like a little bit of skepticism about the effect of equalization long term, doesn't it?
A little bit, but the way it is it needs to be done differently. The formula has to be done differently. That's what they're getting at.
Okay.
The current formula does not work.
Okay, so but you support equalization, at least in the near to medium term, and getting more money for equalization.
Yes,
for
absolutely.
Cape Breton.
For Cape Breton, yes.
Okay, so if the legal route doesn't work, and, you know, I mean, we have to at least consider the possibility here that a judge isn't going to think any differently than they did when they didn't want to hear John Morgan's case. If that route doesn't work, what else could you do as a federal politician to try to get more money to Cape Breton?
Well, lobby, write letters, get people involved, tell the people what's going on, because the government works for us. We don't work for them. So when I'm in there, I'm actually representing everybody that's listening right now or anybody in Cape Breton, whether they want to vote for me or not. I am your voice. So I got to make as much noise as I can. And anything that I do, I will be very transparent, and I will come back and say, this is why I couldn't do it. This is what we need to do to move forward. So as of right now, I don't know where I would go from there, but I definitely would not stop until I got it, because we need that. That's unacceptable.
Okay. Just moving on to some other distinct but perhaps related issues. I'm sure you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure you've probably been hearing about health care from a lot of potential constituents. And what's your view on the state of the current health care system and what you could do as a federal representative to change it?
Well, see, health care is a little bit of a tricky topic because it's actually provincial. So the only thing you can do from a federal level is give more money, which
but
is the same as
equalization. Right?
No, I know, but that's the same as the equalization. If you have to dig a hole and you have two shovels, if I give you 100 people to dig the hole, you're not going to dig it any faster. So you got to figure out another way to dig the hole faster in order to use that 100 extra people. So you have to work with the provinces directly to come up with concrete plans that are going to work and actually help the medical system. Like, for instance, we need more beds. We need more doctors. So, okay, what's your plan for getting doctors? How much money do you need? Okay, I'll get that money for you. You know what I mean? Like, we don't manage the healthcare system itself. We just give the money to it, from my understanding anyway.
Okay. Now, my understanding from the People's Party platform, again, and you know, I'm not an expert on the party. Maybe I've got this wrong, but my understanding is that they're going to look at transfers in the near to medium term, but ultimately what they want is to have some parts of the system privatized, so we'll have a public-private system, and what some critics might call a two-tier system. Would you support a move like that?
Well, see, that's also a misconception. A lot of people hear private and they assume two-tier system, but what actually they mean is a two-path system. So, for instance, in Nova Scotia right now, we got rid of the fee-to-service, which is where a doctor got paid for every patient they see. So before, if you didn't see a patient, you didn't get paid. So the older doctors that have been here for a long time, they still have the same mentality where they see as many patients as they can that day. The newer doctors that came are on a salary. So now they can work half as much and get paid the same amount. So now you need two doctors to replace one doctor. So if you come up with a plan where you can have privately run, federally funded clinics, then you can remove some of those non-emergency people in the ERs waiting for, I've seen one girl wait 36 hours. Well, she could go to one of these privately run walk-in clinics where doctors can make extra money, fee to service, still paid by the government. Nothing would change. You can't get in there faster if you're rich. It's still all government funded. But anything that is privately run usually runs smoother. Anything government run usually has way more baggage with it and way more money and way more disorganized. So you're going to cut costs. You're going to get people seen faster. You're going to have lower wait times, and you're going to have a better healthcare system.
What about doctor recruitment? How would you go about doing that? I know, that's largely a provincial thing, but...
But right there, that works out perfectly, because if you have doctors that are ambitious and they want to make more money, they can come and work in the private clinic. But say they start to get burned out, they can move over and go into the regular... We'd still have the regular hospital. They could go over there and only work half as much and, you know, take a little bit of a break. And if they want to make some more money, they go back over to fee the service. So then you have doctors who want to come here because they have that option, whereas now they don't.
You don't worry that the private system might crowd out the public one?
Well, see, the ER is only for people who are in an emergency. They need to be there. Whereas the privately run, publicly funded clinic would be for, like, if you need a prescription and didn't have a family doctor, or if you cut your finger, or if you fell and banged your head, or stuff, you're sick and you don't know what's wrong with you, you can go in there. You're not going to die right now if you don't get service, but you can go in and get treated. Whereas in an ER, usually they want people in there that are life or death, and they have the instruments and equipment in the ER to diagnose people like that. And in these clinics, they wouldn't. These would be more smaller for taking some of the clutter out of the ERs.
I guess maybe crowd out was the wrong way to put it, but I guess one could imagine the private operations accumulating a lot of money and eventually just attracting more people because of that and starving the public system.
See, I don't think that would happen, because if you look at the public system, we need a lot of doctors. And we need a lot of help and infrastructure to be put in there.
So you want to see the public and the private together, then, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, like a two-way system instead of a two-tier system. Like, I don't want it so that if you got money, you can skip me and go in and get treated. I just want to make sure that somebody's grandmother isn't sitting in the ER for 40 hours because she needs to refill her prescription and her doctor's on vacation. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Ronald?
The vaccine passports. I heard a lot from people who do not want to get it, and I'm not one that wants to get it. And actually, I was put off work because I work in northern Nunavut as a millwright, and they put me on unpaid leave because I wouldn't get vaccinated. So I'm basically giving up a $140,000 a year job for a chance at an $86,000 a year job. So I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it for the people. And there's a lot of people that do not want to have to show papers when they go to a grocery store or go to a restaurant, a gym. They just want to go about their business, and the Constitution supports that. It directly violates the Constitution. And Section 52 says it's the Constitution. It's the supreme law of Canada.
Okay. We do have to leave it there, sir, but thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much. If you have any more questions, you can check me out on Facebook, and my email's there and my phone number. I don't mind talking to anybody.
Next up, we'll hear from Liberal candidate for Cape Breton-Canso, Mike Calloway. Here's Dialogue's Bobby Knock.
I'm going to start off by asking actually the same question I asked your other Cape Breton colleague, and that is the timing of the election, because it's something that has come up.
Sure.
There are some who say this is an election of opportunity, that the Liberals saw a chance for majority government, and... you know, we're holding an election with the fourth wave of the pandemic underway.
It's a great question, Bobby, number one. You know, one of the things that I think I got to see over the 2 years of being ANP is that there was really goodwill between the parties in the first year. Towards the last 6 months, it was arduous and painful to get things done. Even the most minute tasks, in particular, the main opposition party was balking a lot of what we wanted to do. And I think, number one, I think that was one of the rationales for calling an election, is that we have big plans for the country. You know, Mr. Trudeau, Prime Minister Trudeau, had mentioned that, you know, we needed a mandate to, you know, to do that, to invest the way we want to invest in seniors, infrastructure, healthcare. And we needed a strong message, in particular, going to the premiers, that, you know, we have a very progressive plan and we need their support. So that's number one. Number two is, you know, there have been elections, I think maybe four during a pandemic. Ideally, you know, having anything going on during a pandemic is tricky and it is problematic. But at the same point, you know, there's, I think even now, and I think you'll see it right after Labor Day, Bobby, there's going to be a definitive choice between, you know, Canadians looking at the Liberal Party that wants to invest in people, yes, is cognizant of the debt and deficit, but believes the way to grow the country is on investing in people and infrastructure, and another way that the Conservatives would want it. So, you know, I would say that there is never truly a good time for an election, but we are here and we have a plan, and we want to be able to get as many people behind us to support that plan. And, you know, I look at someone, I think Jagmeet Singh had mentioned during the first day when it was called that there shouldn't be an election, and then the following day he was campaigning for Gary Burrell. So, you know, you take all of this, you know, not with a grain of salt, but you listen to everyone. But I think those are the reasons why, Bobby, is that we have a definitive plan coming out of the pandemic, one that invests in doctors, one that invests in seniors, one that invests in accessible and affordable housing. And, you know, we're going to need to hit the ground running, and we, quite frankly, that when you're talking about people's lives, both, you know, in terms of accessible housing, seniors, health, tourism operators, people in the gig economy, we don't have time to play partisan games. We need all hands on deck, and we need Team Canada, and that's what we're proposing.
So, unfortunately, the way things are looking right now, we could be looking at another Liberal majority, or minority, rather, and or even a Conservative minority.
Yeah, I would say, you know, that there is a lot of election left, Bobby. And I think if you look at past elections, I think in 2015, if I'm not mistaken, the Liberals didn't make ground until the last week or two in the election. If you look at the provincial election, one can make and ascertain, at least I think they can, that things really started to move the last week of an election. So, you know, now that summer's around the cusp, sadly, of summer being over, you know, September is when everyone gets back to the routines. And this is where I think you're going to see leaders debates, and you're going to see, you know, ads from all parties illustrating what they stood for before an election and what they stand for now in terms of health care and in terms of all those items that we feel that are important. So lots of time for this election to go any which way but loose. And for me, that's on the national stage. On the local stage, you know, I've been here my entire life. I've dedicated my life to service to Cape Breton Camp. So I am here and I'm working hard before becoming MP, during, and I will after, because it's my community, it's my area. And people know when they call Mike Kellaway, they're going to get a call back and they're going to get someone who takes their swing. I mean, on the doorstep, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, honestly, the doorsteps have been amazing. You know, people like the fact that we're looking to invest in 7,500 new doctors, and that we're going to insist that that's where the money is spent, that we have, you know, we during the budget, and we passed 75 and up in terms of OAS and GIS, and we're promising to do the same thing to 65 to 74. You know, affordable and accessible housing, people are becoming quickly aware that, you know, I'm working with groups like Cape Breton University for non-student affordable and accessible housing in New Dawn, that I'm working with the Undercurrent Youth Center for a new youth center, that we're looking at the development of a couple of harbors, Glace Bay being one, that we've invested historic amounts in small craft harbors, that we've created a new fund for not-for-profits to access, and I've We have a lot of community groups that are accessing that money. And they also know that we've invested about $300 million so far in the last 2 years during my time in various programs and various measures. So I think people know what they're getting with me. They know that I'm a known quantity, that I focus on opportunities, but I also focus on challenges. And they know what they're going to get. I'm not, again, not just visiting. I've been invested in this community. And I'm the community's voice in Ottawa, not the other way around.
Well, speaking of visiting, Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole, when he was here, you mentioned small craft harbors. I think he pledged to double the spending on small craft harbors if he forms government.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that he would bring that up. I mean, we've spent just in the past couple of months $15 million in Cape Breton Council, and more than any other riding in Atlantic Canada. So we put in, in this last budget, $300 million on top of the existing budget. And again, this is where relationships matter, Bobby. I mean, I have a strong relationship with the fishing sector. Why? Because I invested my time in getting to know the sector. And there's going to be some considerable more investments with the Liberal Party. But where he's promising, we've delivered. It's great that he wants to do that, but we'll continue to invest the monies at historic levels that the riding hasn't seen before.
So, speaking of delivered, I mean, you've only been an MP. It's not even quite the 2 years. What kind of a record are you running on when you try to make the argument to people that you deserve another term there as
yeah.
their MP?
Yeah, you know what it is. I think our office and myself, our approach was to get us through COVID, and we're still doing that. Our office played a fundamental role, Bobby, and you can check the facts on this with the Minister of Finance and his department at the time. Played a major role in a couple of areas. One was around CERB. One was around focusing on supports for community groups. One was extending the EI measures from 15 to 26 weeks. I think what I want is the ability to look at continuing investment in assets and in people. And I have I'm the Atlantic Caucus chair. I have a mic directly to the Prime Minister. And I use that. I use that for local issues, regional issues, and national issues. And this is why I would like another term, is that there's so many more opportunities and so many more challenges. And it requires someone. You go into politics for two things. Sister Piggy Bus, Bobby, she taught me poli sci and among other things. And she often said, people go into politics. There's two kinds of people. There are those that want to be someone, and there are those that want to do something. And for me, I look at opportunities around how do we grow the 10 to 12 businesses that are coming out of CBU in bioenergy, and how do we grow it to 20, and how do we get local people connected to it? How do we ensure that we have a role to play, and we do, in ensuring that 7,500 doctors in Canada, that we get a good portion of them here in Cape Breton Council, but we also invest the money to retain them. That we need to consistently up our game in terms of seniors. I'm on the seniors caucus. I like to think that we went to 65 to 74 for GIS because of myself and other MPs that advocated our heart out. So you want a worker, you want a fighter, you want someone that has experience, and you want someone that's invested in the community. I'm your person. If you want something else, you have other choices.
Well, speaking of work to do, I think I remember getting a pamphlet from you in the mail where you talked about guaranteed annual income.
Yep.
Where do things stand with that? I haven't heard that come up in the campaign.
Yeah. Well, I look at it, I wanted to put that out because what I've learned about my riding and being MP and having lived here my entire life is that people are not afraid to have conversations about topics. And what I want to do is have a local, regional, and national conversation. I'm hearing a lot about basic income. I'm hearing pros and cons. Our riding is home to Moses Cody, Jimmy Tompkins, J.B. McLaughlin, where a lot of innovation came from those individuals. So we naturally have a propensity to have conversations around how do we create a stronger social safety net. But what I want to do is have a conversation with all parties, with all businesses, with not-for-profits, with individuals, to talk about how do we strengthen our safety net. I want to hear the pros and I want to hear the cons. And I want to lead that local discussion. I want to lead that regional discussion. And I want to lead that national discussion from coast to coast to coast. So, I've had some interesting conversations of people, who want to talk about basic income, Bobby, and there's various variations of it. And I've talked to local businesses to say, I'm interested in having the conversation, but how do we pay for it? How does this impact HR items in the business? And I say, let's have discussions. Let's not be fear-mongers. Let's have concrete discussions that could, maybe not, impact people. And for me, it's about helping people.
Well, Mike Kellaway, thank you for your time today, and good luck with your campaigning.
Thanks, Bobby. Really appreciate it.
Here's Dave DeVoe again. This time, he's talking to Eddie Orrell, who is the Conservative candidate for Sydney, Victoria.
Now, you're running under the Conservative banner. The Conservatives, lost out quite a bit in 2015, only managed to gain a few seats back last time around. Why do you think the Conservatives are going to do a better job than the Liberals in an area where they don't seem to have been as popular in the last little while?
Well, the one side of that is that right now people are saying the Liberals haven't done nothing for our area, although they've had all but one MP in the province was Liberal, and the election before that, all the province was Liberal. People seem to feel that the Liberal government has forgotten Cape Breton, forgotten Nova Scotia. So the people who approached me and asked me to run were voicing that to me. And when I look back at it, I thought, if I can be fortunate enough to win this seat, maybe I can bring some stuff back here to Cape Breton. I'd like a shot at trying. We need to do something to give ourselves a shot in the arm here to make sure that we can stimulate the economy on the island. Basically, secure the future for our children and our grandchildren so that if they have the option to come back here, they can use it. Right now, they don't have the option. They're having to leave in droves. There's no jobs. And the jobs that are here are taken, and with the pandemic happening and some of the programs that were offered at the time were very important, but now it's time to get back to work, get our people moving, get our economy started again, and like I said, secure the future for our children.
Okay, so you alluded to a number of issues there, so I just want to flesh them out a bit. I'm sure you're hearing about the economy on the doorsteps, as you've just talked about. So, how exactly do you turn the economy around, especially when there are a lot of people who hear politicians at all levels saying they're going to do something differently each time, but, the perception at least is that Cape Breton hasn't been turned around economically. So what would be done different this time, and what could you do differently this time to make a real improvement?
Well, in our five-point plan, securing the future, the very first platform, very first pillar of our five-point plan is jobs. Secure and reinvest in 1 million jobs in the country. Return those jobs that we had before the pandemic back to where they were, including women, young Canadians, the people who suffered the most, areas such as tourism, small businesses, providing incentives for them to reinvest and rebuild and hopefully start new businesses, because our sectors of the economy are failing. We don't have enough tradespeople right now to do with the jobs that are started here on Cape Breton Island, so we want to assist with training and make sure that people have the skills to compete in the markets that are out there. And by investing in that, investing in jobs, we could put those 1 million jobs back.
So could you say a little bit more about exactly how you want to invest? Because, of course, every government invests. It's debatable whether they invest money the right way, but ideally you don't want to just invest money. You want to invest it the right way. So what is the right way in your view, and specifically how would you go about it?
Well, there are a few programs that we're offering. We're offering small businesses a 25% tax credit. To put people back to work that have been on unemployment for at least 4 months. and up to 50 cents or 50% of that credit for people who've been out of work for 6 months. So there's all kinds of opportunities out there that we're going to put money into the educational opportunities for the tradespeople to get them back to work. Now, if the job has changed a little bit, we're going to offer money to help reinvest in their future, reinvest in their training, small business loans so that they can invest in their future. Some of it forgivable, up to 25%, I think, is going to be forgivable on some of the hardest hit sectors of up to $200,000, I believe.
And in terms of all this investment, I know that on the one hand, there's promises to invest. On the other, there's promises to balance the budget over 10 years. And especially in a place with ours, like ours, with, you know, growing population of seniors, costs are going to go up. Are you confident that the budget can be balanced over that time frame while still making all the promised investments?
Well, when you make those investments, you put people back to work, the tax base starts to grow. By growing our tax base, having people back to work, paying income tax, the more people you get back to work, the bigger that tax base is, the more money you bring in. So by bringing in that money, and investing in our future, investing in our kids, securing the economy, securing the future for them, we will reap the benefits on that on the other end. So by doing that, we can bring that budget back into balance. And then we can start looking at paying off some of the debt.
Some would say the real challenge there is going to be health care, because with an aging population, health care is going to get more and more expensive. And, you know, Mr. O'Toole has been criticized for his position on health care, but he's clarified he's for universal health care. So you're promising to balance the budget, but to keep a system in place that's going to get more and more and more expensive over time. I mean, do you think that can be done?
Dave, it's like this. If we can put the proper healthcare professionals in place, get people to visit these healthcare professionals in a timely manner, we can prevent a lot of illness from happening. If you have an illness or if you have an issue and you go to your family doctor where you can get timely access to healthcare, which is a constitutional right, if I believe so, and if we can have that so we have enough doctors, enough nurse practitioners, enough family practice nurses, enough I'm a physiotherapist, enough nurses. If we have enough people in the system and people can get timely access to healthcare, we can save that system a pile of money. And yes, we've gotten good at what we do, and there's a cost to that. But if we can save money by timely access, we can use it for the newest technologies and for the newest treatments and the newest cares, which will, again, cut down on the time and the amount of money spent to treat and prevent these illnesses. So we have to do a balance of all of it, because if we don't do a balance of all of it, it's going to cost a lot more, and we will never be able to afford it. But if you have to wait 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks just to see your family doctor, and every time, all that time in between, your illness is either getting worse or not getting better. So you're taking more medication. You're visiting more healthcare professionals. You're trying to do different things to help with alleviate that. So if we can get that access timely and get people into where they need to be as early as they can be, we can save that system a ton of money. And by saving that money, we can reinvest it in areas that we need it most.
Can you say a little bit about how you think you can help make that happen? I mean, bearing in mind it is a provincial jurisdiction, but there is federal money and oversight. So what role do you see a conservative government playing in supporting the provinces in managing the health care system?
As been stated, we're going to invest 6% a year in the overall health care transfers, which is up to $6 billion over a 5-year or 10-year period. So that is that's one way. Now, the other way is there are issues with recruitment and retention of some of our most valuable healthcare professionals. There are schemes and ways that I have, ideas that I have, that I'm going to bring forward if I'm fortunate enough to get to the position that I'm shooting for, that I can bring forward to that I think we can save the system a lot of money, but also recruit the necessary people to come to work here.
Can you say a little bit about those ideas?
I haven't passed them through with people in the offices that make those decisions and look at the financial part of it yet. But one of the simple things is a resident doctor program. I'm hoping that if we can change how our foreign-trained Canadian students have access to a residency program here in our country or here in our province, if I can help develop a program and help change that, we can get our own kids back home. And by doing that, they're most likely to stay. It's harder to get kids that aren't from here, I'll say Cape Breton and Nova Scotia, to come to our province if they're not from here. So if we can find ways to lure them back incentives to keep them here, incentives to keep the doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals here that we have now. If we can find ways to keep them here, then we can prove that timely access. And it's not a tough thing to do, but it is a difficult thing because we have to be able to show respect to the healthcare professionals that are here now, but also try and draw some of the healthcare professionals that are out there looking for a place to call home. And we know we have the number three island in the world. We've got one of the best provinces in the world to live in. So if we can include that in our pitch to keep people back here, plus some other incentives, then we can look at keeping and retaining and bringing new doctors, new healthcare professionals here, nurses, like say nurse practitioners. But until we do that, we're competing with every other province in the country. So we have to do something just a little bit different. And I have some ideas, and I'll pass them along as we go. But I'm just hoping that we get that opportunity to do that. And we can be part of the solution and not part of that problem.
So you're confident that if the Conservatives form government, that there will be some progress on wait times within the first mandate?
Well, I'm hoping that we can help with the provincial and work with the provincial government. As you know, the Conservative government is formed here in the province of Nova Scotia with the majority. And we're willing to work with that government, but all other governments as well, because everybody's going to be in the same boat. We're willing to work with those governments to make sure that does happen.
Okay. Just about the regional municipality in particular, I know there's still a lot of talk about the port and investment in the port and other major infrastructure projects that largely implicate the government at the municipal level. But what do you see the federal government doing if you get in and if the Conservatives get in to help with infrastructure at the municipal level?
Well, we're talking a port in Sydney. We already have our cruise ship berth done, ready to go. COVID would have stopped it after a little while, but that will come back, we hope. Looking at some other infrastructure projects that are important to this area. We need a wastewater system on the north side. There's one in Glace Bay, there's one in Sydney. We need to look at a wastewater system here on the north side. But we can also look at other infrastructure problems and issues. I've heard from the doorsteps that people are concerned about the railway. If we're going to talk a green economy, what a better way to start than taking some of the many, many thousands of trucks off the road and putting them on rail, where you don't burn near as much fuel. It's not as hard on the highways. We have an industry out there in the trucking industry that is short. They're short drivers. They're short employees.
Now, the railway is going to be hundreds of billions of dollars in upgrades. Is that something you think a federal government should help with? Or?
Well, I think that they can help with it. I can't say that we would pay for the whole thing, but if we have upgrades to the rail system...
You think there should be some money from Ottawa?
I would hope there could be, yes, and that's something that I will ask for, that I will bring to the table. I can't promise that would happen. I'm right now running to be the MP. Not there yet. Don't know what the infrastructure money looks like, but I'm the type of person that when I go looking, I want to get an answer. And then once I get the answer, then I can work with something about that. If the money is not there, then we got to try and find ways to look at private investment, municipal, provincial investment, to go along with some federal investment if we can do that. I don't think any one group is going to invest hundreds of million dollars in a railway, but if we can upgrade it enough that we can put cars on there. I'm told that the railway unloads 178,000 truckloads of goods in Moncton every year to ship to Cape Breton. So if they say they need 10% of that to make the railway viable, then I think the trucking industry will work with us to see that happened. So there's different things we can work on. There's other issues that have to happen. Of course, you have to have there's infrastructure issues there that have to be done first. There's upgrades in certain areas. I think by working with the province and with the municipality and maybe some private investment, if the port is to be viable, if Cape Breton is to be viable, we have to look at all options. And some of those options could be trucking more. Some could be trucking less. If we can get a port here and get containers that offload and get shipped locally on trucks, and containers that get offloaded and get shipped nationally on train, or transshipped up through the St. Lawrence Seaway, or up to the St. Lawrence Seaway and go from there. There's options there, but it's something we have to look at and have to be able to study to make sure that it is viable.
Okay. On that note, Eddie, is there anything else you'd like to add for our listeners?
Well, I ran in 2019, was unsuccessful, was approached again to run now because of the situation our island is in, the dire straits that are happening here. People aren't happy with with the present government spending the money the way they're spending it with no return on their investment. So I'm running to try and put some kind of sense back in the government. I hope I'm only one person, but I'm one person that has a very strong sense of island, a strong sense of community. I'm looking to see if we can secure our future for our families, our children, our grandchildren, and our whole community.
Eddie Orle, thanks again for being with us today, sir.
Not a problem, David. You have a good day.
And last but not least, here's Dialogue's Donnie Antle, and he caught up with Jeff Ward. He's the NDP candidate for Sydney, Victoria.
My first job was alcohol and drug youth worker, and then I and that led into policing, and I was a police officer for 10 years, but I went back to working as a youth, and I still work with the youth now. I work with a group called LOVE, Leave Out Violence. Now, our headquarters is in Halifax, so I'm the youth coordinator here and member two, and it's an amazing group. We bring kids together, we feed them, we have something to eat, pizza or chicken, and then we sit around, we check in, and we talk, see what's going on. And then before they leave, I make sure we check out. So I want to see how you're doing and what's going on. And a lot of times, sometimes kids are having issues. And if we have to take a youth or somebody else in need, because I also worked at the Escasoni Crisis Center. I was the director there for the first year. And when we have to take people to the hospital and they're seeing somebody and then they got to wait 364 days to see that profession, something's not right.
Yeah.
Something's not right. Something's not right when code critical is being called. I mean, I see the Facebook posts all the time. So, and the other day, a story was written, ambulances were lined up. Ambulances are lined up to get triaged. Ladies and gentlemen, like, that is a crisis. That is a crisis. And that's happening here. That's happening all through New Brunswick. Nova Scotia. And probably maybe New Brunswick too. But when stuff like that is happening in our healthcare system, and also doctors, I was at doorsteps and people are saying that they can't find a doctor. They can't find a doctor. And I was like, thinking how fortunate I have a doctor. But our doctor, I realized that our doctor does the whole community a member to. So can you imagine there's another doctor in another First Nation community that has to do all the First Nation? That's a lot of people. So can you imagine? I'm fortunate to have a doctor. But then again, people don't have doctors. And how do we get them there? We have plans for that. You know, we want to. There's so many ideas, but we have to make sure that we can make those decisions and take these issues to Ottawa. Take them to Ottawa. It's so important to take these to Ottawa and that they have to know what is happening here. I heard a saying yesterday, just in New Waterford. I love the saying, the local people know where the thin ice is. And that is so true. That is so true. So, you know, and that's why I'm running. I am running because I sit on these committees. I work with the people day in, day out. I was at the rally today. People don't realize this. You know, there was a rally put on by the Ally Center every single year. And I've been there. And with the ACE Coalition and many organizations. And a lot of times it is, how do we support them? Well, I go and drum. We do the opening prayer. We share education. But that's that support, that unity of coming together. And that's what we do.
Yeah. And I know from personal experience, because I know you, we've known each other for a while, that you really are, you're very positive. You're, you know, like you said, like love, community, unity. And Jagmeet's message seems to be the same thing. So that must have resonated for you as well.
Very much so. And he knows what it's like to live hard times and to be challenged, and also to work around barricades or to work around or to face things such as, you know, those negative things that are out there. He knows that. He never came from privilege. You know, he never came from a legacy, you know. And if you do, that's fine. That's fine. That's great. But there's a lot of people out there, everyday people that are working, and it's hard, and it's not easy. It's not easy being cheesy.
It's not easy being cheesy. That is true. I'm the cheesiest person I know, and it is very difficult. So, and of course, I do have to ask you about this because this this came up.
Hmm.
And of course, that was Jaime Batiste had made some comments about the possibility of having two indigenous candidates in one riding that might split the indigenous vote and lead to a conservative win in Sydney, Victoria.
It's funny to assume that all indigenous people are liberal. That's quite an assumption. Because if you look at elections.com, it states there. It shows you the numbers. It shows you the numbers of how many voted in each community. It's broken right down. And even, like, so that's there. There is indigenous people that vote for many different parties and many different people. So that was, I don't understand that. That was, because I know when it comes to voting, the party is so important. You know, when we talk about the many things that are happening that are out there, and when people are not saying Cape Breton, in this record, if you don't mention Cape Breton, and you have an opportunity, and if I have an opportunity, when I get to Ottawa, and I say, Mr. Speaker, my name is Jeff Ward from Cape Breton, and I want to talk about Cape Breton and the issues that are happening today in Cape Breton, and how come our roads, how come it's the highway is not twinned to Cape Breton? How come this tourism dollars, we have the best island, which is in the top five islands in the world, in Cape Breton. We need jobs in Cape Breton. I will make sure that Cape Breton is mentioned numerous times. And if I have to sing a song and chant with my drum to make that extra noise, to add that. Because here's the thing, though. We've never had a minister here for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who was in power. I'm just wondering why. You know? So it's these things that, you know, we got to look at track records. My record's there. Please. I sit on a lot of boards, a lot of committees, and you know, right to coach in Little League. T-ball. Which, you know, there's a great minor ball system here. There's a lot of great players here in Little League. Little League has produced a lot of great players. So I just want to shout out to all the things, to the kids, because you know what? We look at the health crisis. We look at jobs. The elderly, can they afford the seniors' homes? You know, it's hard. Also, too, the kids. What are the programs that they're bringing for our kids? You know, I know because I work with the kids. I know the challenges. So I won't need an ED or AD or I don't know. Sorry, I don't know the lingo yet. But I don't need the committees to. My hired professionals to tell me what's the biggest issues. I sit on these committees. I know what's happening, you know? So I pick up the phone. I'll call you. Mm-hmm. You know, when I want to talk about radio, I call you directly. And I have your number.
Yeah.
So that's what I do when there's issues happening downtown. And I don't want to start dropping all the names because I don't think I'm allowed to. But I my phone is pretty full of cell phones. I mean, cell phone numbers. So, and on that, cell phone issues. Oh my God. We are paying the highest rates in the world. And people think cell phones and high speed internet is not an issue. That must be a Toronto, Montreal. It's here. There was a story that not too long, JP Cormier, he needed high speed in order to run his studio. And it would make him more, allow him to do what he does. And he doesn't have the broadband. So, it's these issues that are affecting us here. So sometimes when we talk about affordability, also we talk about pharmacare. Can you afford those medicines? I don't know about you, but I'm tired of generic medication because
mm-hmm.
my plan doesn't, I barely have a plan, you know? And it's sad that people have to get these provincial jobs and federal jobs just to get that plan for drugs with the real names on it and not generic drugs. So it's that kind of issues, you know. Man, I was knocking on his door and we talked and he was telling me, you know, about metformin.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get 3 months supply ahead of time from a doctor that he made it 3 months he had to wait to go see. And he finally got to see him, and he gets a 3-month supply. And it's a mess. It's really a mess. And it's happening right here.
Yeah. And of course, a lot of the issues that Jagmeet has been talking about on the national stage do affect and housing.
Housing is a big issue. Yeah. Have you been down to Townsend Street in the corner of George?
Yes, I have.
Yes. It's real, folks.
Yeah.
It's right here in Cape Breton. Housing is an issue. Affordability is an issue. Even students that come in, and that's an issue, you know. So it's one of those things that affects everybody. And some people think it's just a city issue and not rural. Well, everybody still has to shop in town or shop in the city. So it does affect, and sometimes people don't see it, you know. It's like, you know, people don't see the forest beyond the trees.
Yeah.
It happens.
Well, that about covers all of my questions. So is there anything else you'd like to add? Because, I mean, you're pretty well known in the CBRM itself.
Yes.
But, of course, there's going to be voters that are out in the rural areas up in Victoria, that like Victoria County voters, that might not know you as well. So is there anything you'd like to say to them?
Oh, I'd just like to tell everybody, I mean, I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm planning on doing a whole tour, the whole community. And I've been through New Waterford. I didn't realize how big it was. That's a lot bigger than you think. So I'm out there 3 times so far. And then you got to go Whitney Pier. There's a big area, South Bar. There's so many areas. And then you go right up all the way through to Inganish, in that area, Celtic Lodge. I want to go right to St. Lawrence Bay. And I'm planning on. But I've been in all these communities at one time or another. So that's the great thing. So remember me from either performing or singing or being in your community at another event. So and we want to go see everybody the best, you know, and make sure that everybody is included. But here's the other thing too. People come in, you could vote early. Because here's the other thing. I can't believe they called election missed a fourth wave. And with COVID and what's happening, be safe. You could actually go to the Ukrainian Hall now and you could vote. I believe our ballots are ready now. If not, they'll be ready on the 10th. So advanced polling is so important. If you need to drive, call any candidate. They will arrange it for you. Any headquarters, no matter what party you're part of, call somebody. They will drive you. They'll get you a drive. They'll get you a drive to go vote and at the Ukrainian Hall. And that way, too, it's not so busy on election day. And that you don't have to bump into too many people. So stay safe. Stay safe is my biggest point right now, is to stay safe.
That's a good point, too. Everybody stay safe and keep washing your hands, wearing your masks, get your shot when you can. NDP candidate for Sydney, Victoria, Jeff Ward. Jeff, thank you so much for coming in today.
And thank you. It was a true honor. Walalio.
Thank you. Walalio.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sundays at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-849-9303 or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcast, available now online at coastalradio.ca.